Being recorded, great. Jordan, alcoholic.
Hi, Jordan.
Thank you, Glenn, for asking me to speak on very short notice. I kind of thought I'd have a lot more time. Like, I have to be sober for longer to speak, and I'm really glad I'm not actually at the real YPG. Like, the main building is very intimidating. My sobriety date is December 8th, 2013. I have a sponsor. I'm not yet qualified to sponsor, but I will be, hopefully one day. See, I grew up in Tampa, born and raised in, like, Theodota Sassa, North Tampa area. And my early childhood was pretty cool. I mean, my stepdad raised me from when I was born. He's like my father. And my mom was around, and I have a little sister. I grew up with her. Definitely a weird kid. Still am, kind of weird. But was always awkward. Always an awkward kid. Never really felt like I fit in. And was kind of a nerd, which again, I still am. See, when I was 12 years old, my stepdad was in. I should also say, my stepdad was an addict, alcoholic, untreated. And when I was 12, January 1st of 2000, he was in a really bad car accident. He suffered a traumatic brain injury, and that kind of rocked our family. He is definitely not who he used to be. And you know, I knew he was out on like one of his week-long binges or whatever. Sorry, I'm so nervous. Wow. So I always swore off drugs and alcohol. Like, I would never do that. You know, it ruined our family. My mom had to raise me from then on by herself, pretty much, and my sister. And that was rough on her. So I was pretty good kid until about 15. Started hanging out with the neighborhood boys and started drinking. It never really got out of hand because I had baseball. Baseball was like my thing that I did that kept me really busy and kept me in line. So I don't really remember much about my first drink. I know we had a couple screwdrivers and wasted. Hit my head on a ceiling fan twice. Yeah, same one two times. So like high school, a lot of the same. Baseball, drank on the weekends sometimes. Mostly not. Kind of coasted through school. I think I graduated with like a 4.01, so I was the last person to qualify for honors. And I thought that was the coolest thing. Like, I worked just enough to get that, but not hard enough to, you know, actually, I don't know, it just didn't really matter to me. I got to play baseball in college for 2 years, tore my elbow, and that's when, like, all the fun began, really. I started really drinking a lot. It got pretty bad quick. I remember, I think I was 19 years old. I was at the beach, at like a beach party in St. Pete. And we were just drinking on the beach, and for whatever reason, the cops thought it was a really serious problem, and helicopters came, they swarmed us. One kid ended up swimming into the ocean to try and get away from the cops. And they sent a dog after him, and the dog, like, caught him, and helicopters were all over the place. It was crazy. But me, I decided I was going to run through this neighborhood, and I was hopping fences, and I hopped the fence into an alleyway, and a cop was there waiting for me, and he told me to freeze or he'd shoot me with his taser. I was like, no, and I ran, and he tased me, and I ended up going to like juvenile detention. I guess I must not have been 19, because I went to JARF, juvenile addiction rehab. And I had never done any other drugs. I know this is AA, but I never done anything but drink until that point. And all that place did was teach me about drugs. Like, we spent a whole day talking about all the other drugs, and I was like, cool, it's pretty neat. So, you know, my mom had to come pick me up. She was crying, and it's terrible. So then, more of the same, kept drinking through college, kind of flunking every other class. I still haven't finished, but I plan on going back. Then about 2 years later, I was at a company party, and I worked at Jackson's, and we had a really good year, so they gave us an open bar, which was a terrible idea for me. I'm pretty sure every picture I was double-fisted, and I ended up blacking out at like 10:30, and the night progressed. We had this caravan set up for, we were going to go to a hotel afterwards, and my buddy told me, you know, you're in the first car. So I go to get in the first car, which was actually the car in front of the first car. And it was this guy, his wife, and their teenage daughter. And I open the back door, and I just hop in, I'm like, let's go, whatever. And they freaked out, kicked me out of the car. I made it back to my friend's vehicle, sat in that vehicle for a little bit. And we weren't moving, and I had to use the restroom, so I got out of the car, went behind the alley. This is at Mangroves, for anyone that's from here. This is right on Howard. So I'm behind the alleyway, and I'm peeing on a tree. And by this time, the cops are looking for me, and I'm wearing this, like, audacious white sweater that, like, I could have been any other person wearing that sweater, and I would have fit the description. And, again, the cops put the lights on, told me to freeze, and I did not freeze. I tried to run. I think I made it, like, 5 steps. They got me on the ground. They were trying to get me in handcuffs, and I was not cooperating, so they maced me. Yeah. I really don't remember any of this. This is all told to me by classification. When you go to jail, there's a classification. They read you your... I'm sure some of you know about that. So they're telling me this. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like 5 in the morning. I'm like, I don't do that. But I did. I definitely did. So I got some charges for that. They were dropped. I got a decent lawyer, paid $1,500 for her to write a letter to the family, and they dropped it. So again, like, no consequences other than going to jail and crying to my mom every 15 minutes to bail me out. not even a year later, I got a DUI. Alcohol, the consequences, as bad as they were, looking back, they did not affect me. I would have drank till I was 90 probably. I can say this now that I'm grateful to also be an addict, because I came to treatment because of drugs, and you know, at a young age, I went to Turning Point at 10 minutes. Wow, good. I relapsed a few times. We can talk about that. I went to Turning Point 2 years ago. I was in there on my birthday. I was crazy. I walked in there with a big smile, and I thought, you know, everything's going to be great. And we were in accountability after like 5 or 6 days, and we're going around the room, and I think I'm flying under the radar. And this girl calls me out, man. She's like, I have a concern for Jordan. And she goes, why are you so effing happy? You know, like, you're an addict. What are you doing? You know, and things got kind of real in there after that. You know, I had a behavioral staffing the next day. And again, I think I'm doing nothing wrong, but apparently I was doing everything wrong. And I kind of, like, you know, I definitely very fortunate to go to treatment. I learned a lot about this disease. I learned a lot about myself and how I drank, not just to have fun, because, I mean, it really wasn't fun towards the end. Getting arrested is never fun. But I learned a lot about all that stuff. And I learned about AA, which is awesome, because you guys have definitely saved my life more than once. So I stayed in treatment for, like, I don't know, 20 days. My insurance didn't believe I had a mental problem anymore. So I had to go. Moved into a halfway house at my sponsor's suggestion. I kind of was like, when I left treatment, I was really ready to do whatever it took, because my back was against the wall. I had nothing. My mom and sister had enough of me. They were not going to let me come home. So I did that. Got a job, put together like 60 days maybe, and what I tend to do is when things get good, which for me happens, doesn't take long, you know, I'm pretty, when I'm sober, I'm definitely an employable person, and I can get a job pretty quickly. I work in the service industry, so I'm, you know, anyone can get a job pretty quickly in the service industry, for those of you looking for work. So I would get a job. I've gotten a job, and, you know, I'm doing the deal, starting to make money, and I'm getting, you know, got a nice phone, nice clothes, whatever. And then I just stop going to meetings, or stop calling my sponsor, or even when I call, I'm not taking those suggestions that got me to where I was. So about 60 days, I relapsed, and I got kicked out of the halfway house. Enough guys had some faith in me that I got into another halfway house really quickly. Someone even put money down for me to move in. And that was a koala house. Lived there for 90 days this time, relapsed. Again, same thing. First month or two, felt like I was on point. I was definitely going to my meetings, praying, talking to people, starting to build a network, and then as soon as things got good, right back out the door. I had got another job. Oh, every time I relapse, I lose my job, by the way, because I'm not employable when I relapse. I mean, I just can't get to work on time. You know, when I'm sober, I iron my shirt like someone like a Marine, but then the next day I'll come in all wrinkly and don't know how to shave all of a sudden. So I get fired real quick. And yeah, I got another job while I was at the Koala House. Start making money again, start getting stuff back. It's all the nice, pretty things that, you know, I would use to determine how good I'm doing, you know? And that's just not the case. So I get kicked out of the Koala House. Actually, after I relapsed the first time in the Koala House, they made me pay a deposit to stay, right? So I had to come up with like $600. And I did that, and then 3 days later I relapsed again, so I lost all that and had to leave. And now I ended up on my friend's couch, who's an alcoholic and is active in that addiction. So I'm just kind of like living there. It was three of us in a one-bedroom apartment. So me and this guy were sharing a couch and a love seat in a one-bedroom apartment. Two guys in a two-bedroom apartment is like a lot, but you got three in one bedroom, not cool. You know, and I kind of just like live that way for a while. Just still not really like I'd go to meetings, show up, and I would try to act as if things were good. So I'd come to meetings just tore up, and you know, just totally in denial, just thinking that I'm gonna figure this out, or I have it figured out, and no one can tell. And I could just tell by talking to people, they're like, yeah, whatever, you know, just full of shit, man, just total full of shit. So I did that like five or six times, honestly, in the last 2 years. And this last time, I was actually back at the first halfway house. They took me back, and I had gotten like 4 months, and this time I got a really good job. I had got a car. I had all this nice crap, and it doesn't really mean anything. And I took it all back. I stopped doing everything that got me where I was. And I got kicked out. I ended up back at that same friend's apartment. And for like about a month, I was just like, screw it. I stopped going to meetings, stopped trying to do any of it. I was so ashamed. Like, coming back in these rooms was so hard for me because, you know, I don't know if it's that I didn't trust you all to accept me or if I didn't really think you cared, but I just totally turned my back on AA. And what happened that time was I was with a friend, I was with an acquaintance. We went and got tore up, and we were basically on the other side of town. He drove. He ends up getting arrested. The police told me to kick rocks. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I walked home at 1 o'clock in the morning, all the way to Yana, basically. I was living right by Yana. And the whole walk home, I was so pissed. I was like, never again, I'm not doing this. But I was too scared to come back to AA. For like 2 weeks, I was sober. And I just wasn't going to meetings. And that was the loneliest, worst 2 weeks of my life to that point. I didn't have anybody to talk to. But I was like sober dealing with these emotions, which I don't recommend it at all. Unless you really need to hit a bottom, then you can do that all you want. Because that's what I did. It was, you know, it was terrible. So I finally found my way back into the rooms. I think I was just fed up. And I still have the same sponsor. He told me, he's very, like, I don't know if it's not timid, but, you know, like, definitely not eager to work the steps as fast. I guess that's the best way I could put it. Wanted to see me actually put in work. And over these last 6 months, five months about, you know, I've gotten some stuff back. It's not what it's about, though. You know, I definitely took the whole God thing way more serious, as if my life depends on it, because I found out the hard way that it does. You know, if I call 10 people and they don't answer the phone, I still have to try and stay sober. And the way I found to do that is to, you know, pray and through God. And my sponsor told me from the beginning, because I have I had a shaky relationship with God. You know, a lot of things happened in my life that I blamed God for and wondered where the hell He was. My sponsor told me to seek God through AA, through people. Find people that are working a program and trying to latch onto them and do what they do. Believe that you believe. And that really helped me. So many things have been done for me from people that don't even know me, that like I really can't express what that means to me. And I don't know, I hope one day I can give it back. I don't have anything else to say, really.